Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sean, and it is Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016, and I am so glad to welcome you to episode number 11 of Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. On tonight's show, we are going to have WWE New Era Raw results and reactions, as well as SmackDown Live results and reactions coming up in just a bit. And also, lots and lots of news and rumors from the man himself, Big T. Gonna have to check in with that, absolutely for sure. And also tonight, we will have a fun countdown to break it back, to bring it back to where we all began with our countdowns, probably from WhatCulture.com. But that's all coming up tonight here live on Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And now, enough of me and more of this guy. It's the host of the show, live from Cleveland, Ohio, Big T.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Hello. Welcome to this brand new episode of Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast here. And,
Yo, real quick, did you just see someone else was in the hangout?
yeah, Evan was in here, and then I don't know, he dropped out maybe because doing the opening real quick.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, buddy. Sorry about that.
That's okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here live, as Sean said, for episode 11 of Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast here on Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016. And I just want to say thank you to Sean for the wonderful introduction, as always. And we're going to have a special night tonight. And, you know, I'm really excited for what we got going on. I hope all of you out there are doing well and tuning into this wonderful podcast. And, you know, before we dive in to Raw, SmackDown, and the news and rumors part of it, I just want to give you my little thought, you know, for the week, like I always do. And I must tell you know, the brand extension draft, has it given us quality television on Raw and SmackDown so far? Yes, it has. Will it last? You know, that's to be seen. Like, I'm already thinking of, you know, match possibilities that we could have that is already kind of being taken away from us. And, you know, as we heard last night, there's going to be another women's championship and another tag team championship for, you know, SmackDown. And I'm just going to explain on the podcast, even though I explained it on my Raw and SmackDown reviews on YouTube, I'm going to explain it here on the podcast as to why I think, you know, this is not the best of ideas here for, you know, SmackDown to do this and for the WWE to do this as a whole. So far, you have, by my count, I believe 6 women on SmackDown. I believe like 7 on Raw or 8 on Raw, somewhere around that general area. Same thing with tag teams. I think there's like, what, 5 on SmackDown, maybe 6 or 7 on Raw. And, you know, I can't help but think that this is what's going to be the beginning of what's going to hurt the brand split. Because with only 6 women on SmackDown, you're going to see so many of the same match combinations. Same on Raw, 7 women on there, you're going to see so many of the same match combinations. And I don't like it. I don't like it because it's going to get very stale very quick. And same thing with the tag division. It's going to get stale very quick. Now, if I was WWE, all right, if they had to do the draft this way by splitting teams up on different shows and splitting women up on different shows, have the tag team and the women's belts go in between both shows. Now, that I'm not even in favor of. What I would have did from the beginning is put the women on either Raw or SmackDown and put the tag teams on either Raw or SmackDown. Make those divisions exclusive to, you know, either one of the two shows. And another thing is the belt designs, which I'm not happy of. I seen something, I believe it was on Sportskeeda last night, and I'll try to pull this up in the news and rumors segment and give you guys a screenshot of it. From what the new belts are going to look like, I think it's very generic. I don't think it's very creative at all. If this is indeed the route they're going, it has not been confirmed that this is the way they're going to go. But this is just a rumor, so take it with a grain of salt. Is, I seen a picture, the Raw title, the Universal Championship, you know how the middle of the title right now is, you know, just black leather? They're going to make the center of the title on Raw, from what I'm seeing, they're going to make it red, just like how the Women's Championship is. It's going to be red, but with a black strap. And then SmackDown's, the center of it will be blue with a black strap. So basically it'll be the colors of Raw for Raw's title and the colors of SmackDown's for SmackDown's title. And, you know, that's another thing. Not very creative, not much thought put into it. Just using the brand's colors with the same exact logo, same exact design, nothing changing. I mean, WWE really has to get their stuff in order here, because, you know, you have a creative team, and I don't know if it's the fact of creative not doing their jobs or if it's just Vince McMahon shooting great ideas down from creative, and, you know, Vince McMahon just going about it his own way. And if that's what it is, Vince McMahon really needs to take a look into the mirror to, you know, see how this is going to go. And I don't know, I'm at a loss. You know, we'll have to see how this plays out. But as far as with the new titles being added, from what I'm hearing that SmackDown is going to do, whether or not it's official, I don't know. And the same thing with the world titles for Raw and SmackDown. It's really making me think of nothing but a complete mess here. But just to give you guys a quick recap of what's happening on the show tonight, we're going to do Raw and SmackDown recaps. I think we're going to spend about 15 minutes apiece on those, go into news and rumors. I got plenty of stories there. I got about I think 5 or 6 of them lined up. I want to try to get that in, you know, in a certain amount of time. If I feel that it's going to take too long, maybe I'll do a separate video, you know, just going over a couple more of the rumors if I have to. But I think I could get them all in. And then Sean reading a great countdown tonight. I'm sure he's got a list in order that he wants to do. And also we got a very special guest joining us here tonight on the podcast. And we got our buddy Evan along here for the ride with us.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. How's it going, Evan?
Good, good.
It's good to have you back on, and I hope you'll enjoy what we got tonight. All that good stuff.
I'm glad to be on.
And oh, definitely, man. I'm glad to have you, and I'm sure Sean is too. So it's going to be a fun time. So
sorry about that. I was talking, but my mic was still muted.
I'm going to send you a text real quick, Sean.
Okay. But I hope you guys had a great rest of your SmackDown broadcast last night. But
oh yeah.
I guess we'll just head right into it. On Monday Night Raw, August 1st, 2016. Whoa. Pop-ups cramping my style.
Nice.
I couldn't even find that one. All right, well, Monday Night Raw, August 1st, 2016, live from Atlanta, Georgia. First match of the night was Sasha Banks, Enzo Amore, in a mixed tag team match against Charlotte and Chris Jericho.
You know what? I gotta admit, for a start of Raw, I really like that, I really like the way they started off. By the way, Sean, I just sent you that text.
Yep. I thought
it was a great start. Thought it was an interesting match. And, you know, it got me invested for things that were to come. What about you, Evan?
I think it was definitely, definitely a different way, and I think a different way to open the show. It's been a while since we've had a mixed tag match, let alone a mixed tag match open the show. I mean, that's even been longer. So, I mean, they want to book this new era. They got to start doing some different things, and I mean, that has to involve, you know, that has to involve sucking it up and just putting in some different style matches.
Yeah, I think they did great there. What about you, Sean?
I definitely enjoyed it. I thought it was a really interesting pairing. It wasn't boring at all. Enzo's great, Jericho's great, and I know Big T won't agree with me, but I think both Charlotte and Sasha are great, and it was a really entertaining way to kick off the show.
It was. I do got to give them that. They did a great job. They did do a great job. What do we got next on the order here?
Well, and by the way, Charlotte and Chris Jericho, they defeated Sasha Banks and Enzo Amore in that bout to kick off Raw. And in the second match of the night, Braun Strowman defeated Evan from our show. Evan Engerholt, who got paid a whole $1,000 to get SmackDown by Braun Strowman, who, again, I think is a promising, intimidating, and entertaining character. I think he's a lot better off now than he was with the Wyatt family. I think when he was with the Wyatt family, people sort of automatically had the stigma with him, oh, he's just another Wyatt guy. But now he has an opportunity to make a name for himself and to be the big dominator on the Raw roster, and I'm looking forward to it personally.
You know what? In my personal opinion, I think Strowman gets a chance to do big things. He really does. The only thing that I'm kind of wondering here is Braun Strowman just going to be another one of those guys where he starts off hot and starts off real good, and then next thing you know, the bottom's just going to drop out, and you know, we won't be seeing or hearing much of him anymore. That's the main thing. But I mean, with Strowman, you know, of course he dominated the jobber that he faced, as he should, and I hope that they start moving on to bigger things with Strowman and actually have him face, you know, like maybe real talent employed by the WWE, even if it's people on their jobber circuit, just to really start getting his feet wet and, you know, get him going and then build him up that way. So, Evan, how do you feel about all that?
I mean, yeah, I think Braun Strowman is definitely better off without Bray Wyatt, Eric Rowan, or any of them. I don't mind them doing these so-called squash matches right now, just to introduce like new talent and try to like get some wins under their belt. But I mean, I know Sean likes Strowman from what I can gather. I don't really like him. I mean, everybody has their own opinion. My opinion is that he will be just another big guy who in a year won't amount to much in WWE.
That's kind of what I'm feeling right now, but you know what? Only thing I guess that we can do is hope that, you know, WWE does right by him and, you know, finally makes a big guy become a star rather than just a flash in the pan for a year.
I mean, you could be, you know, you could be a big guy and just be successful without, you know, having a main event match. I mean, you could just be a solid mid-carder, and hell, he might even work his way up somewhere down the road. And I don't necessarily, like, love the guy or anything, but I'm not going to not like him just because he's a big guy. You know, I think too many people are like, oh, well, he's old school. You know, he's what Vince used to like, so I'm not going to like him. Well, you know what, though? That's the beauty of the WWE. Entertainment comes in all shapes and sizes, and you got to let a person explore their potential. And I think one match I was wondering about, I'm like, oh, maybe this would be cool. If you had Jinder Mahal, who made a return later in Raw, maybe he could be someone to, you know, take on Braun Strowman. I'm sure they could have some pretty decent work there, but who knows? We'll see once Raw has its first solo pay-per-view coming in September. They'll be needing to make a lot of these type of mid-card matches to fill time, and we could be up for a good surprise.
That's for sure.
And speaking of filling time, the Shining Stars, Primo and Epico, they defeated the Pokemon Go playing Golden Truth.
And the only reason why the Shining Stars won is because R-Truth was too distracted with Pokemon Go to try to help his own partner, for God's sakes. That was a pretty big mess there. I gotta say on that one, that was a pretty big mess.
I believe I was in the kitchen doing something a lot more important than watching that match during that match.
Yeah, that match was just so unimportant. Nothing but filler to kill time, and you know, that's about it. There was nothing to it. I mean, yeah, Shining Stars get the win. And like I said, I keep seeing these guys, and they just make me feel like, you know, like, hey, you know, let's buy a timeshare in Puerto Rico or something. That's just how they make you feel.
I think this was a big waste of time. I mean, I'm fine with having fillers and you know, these 5-minute matches just to fill a show. That's the consequences of having a 3-hour show. Now, do I want you to make them fillers worth my time and worth my actual, like, attention? Yes. I think this was childish, how R-Truth wasn't even looking at the match. It didn't look like he cared. It didn't look like he didn't care one little bit. All he was caring about was being on his phone playing Pokemon Go. I think this was geared towards 8-year-old kids who play the game, and yeah, I just think this was a big waste of filler. I think you probably could have had the Shining Stars versus somebody else, and it would have been better. Like the Shining Stars versus the Dudleys or something like that, and it would have been much better filler than this was. I thought this was very childish and not really funny, and for some reason Vince thinks that that is funny, and Vince is completely wrong.
Oh yeah, he couldn't be more wrong. I mean, I don't understand what goes through Vince's mind half the time.
I don't know. So some of the stuff he does and some of the stuff he's done in the past, it's like I feel like his business humor is different from his actual humor. I think he should put it aside and say, what do I think is actually funny? If I think this is stupid, I'm not going to put it out there so that millions of people can see it. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what I think's funny. I run the show here. I can do whatever I want. I'm going to do what I think is funny. If you honestly think that R-Truth playing Pokemon Go and neglecting his partner, who is a veteran in the WWE and has been here for over 20 years, if you really think that that is funny, Vince just needs to stop with this funny gimmick stuff because he's completely immature.
And the biggest threat with that was, that was the ultimate channel-changing moment, you know, and sometimes people aren't going to flip back after they turn the channel watching something like that.
No, because let's say they turn a channel and they get into something else. Why? And they're like, well, yeah, Raw was on. Oh, wait, but the last thing I saw was a grown man playing Pokemon Go in the middle of a match. So I'm not really going to turn that back on.
All right, well, I definitely agree with you guys there. But up next we had Big T, one of your friends, Ariel Monroe, got defeated, unfortunately, by the... whatever you want to call her, Nia Jax. I mean, I'm just not a fan of Nia Jax. She does not interest me at all. I don't care about big women wrestlers. I don't care about it. I'm annoyed by it. That's my chance. I would rather watch R-Truth play Pokemon Go than see a Nia Jax match. I think it's redundant and just... I mean, this shit's... Now, don't get me wrong. I know I could be called the hypocrite because I said all this about Braun Strowman. But the thing with Nia Jax is, at least we know Braun Strowman is, I don't know, like I don't know what the hell it is. I cannot take Nia Jax seriously. I think she's, I'm just gonna say it. I think she's fat, and I think she's just a waste. Like she's not a, I mean, at least Braun Strowman is athletic looking. Nia Jax just is sort of gross. And I
she looks very out of shape. Very out of shape.
I don't know what it is.
You know how like they call Roman Reigns like the big dog? I call Nia Jax like the big girl or like the big oversized pup or something like that. Something.
And you know what? Her outfits aren't helping her at all. Because
They're too tight.
With Awesome Kong, they had her dressed right. But with Nia Jax, she's looking like a freaking a buoy or something, like those buoys in the ocean. I mean, it's just like, whoa. And you wouldn't think for one second that this is some, you know, professional wrestler. You would think this is some, you know, housewife who eats all day that got... called up to the main roster one day and put in latex clothing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, this is going to sound very weird. I don't mean this to sound weird. They should just have her dressed like Awesome Kong or as she was in WWE, Karma, and just have like no real long pants. Don't have them. Just have the exact same outfit. It'll look much better. Obviously not the exact same. You'll make some tweaks, but I think that Nia Jax, she has some potential, but right now, I mean, if you can't even get over her wardrobe, there's a problem.
See, for me, it's a lost cause. I'm like, when you have Charlotte and you have Sasha and you have Bayley, like Asuka coming up. I mean, these are top-notch, world-class athletes, moonsaulters, you know, incredible beauties in their own right, and then you have Nia Jax come in. It's like, how on earth are you ever going to take Nia Jax serious when you could have, you know, Charlotte doing literally backflips around her?
Okay, here you go,
Sean. She stands no chance.
Here's the thing, all right. You have Sasha Banks in the middle of the ring, and you have to choose your Vince, and you have to choose her opponent. You have to choose between Nia Jax and Eva Marie. Who do you pick and why?
Well, probably Eva Marie, because at least Eva, you could manage to get the bank statement placed in. Probably can't even reach around freaking Nia Jax.
I couldn't picture Sasha doing a bank statement to Nia Jax to get the backstabber on her to flip her over and then lock in the hold all in one motion. That's one point where I do agree. Like, Eva Marie, you could use her as a jobber and job up Sasha in under a minute, and Sasha can lock it in and it's done. So I do see it from that standpoint, because I just don't know how Sasha would get Nia Jax's all her weight down on her knees and then flip her all the way over like she does, and then lock in the submission in one fell swoop. It doesn't seem like that would work at all. And, you know, Nia Jax, pretty much her matches that she has been doing is, you know, same old, same old. You know, nothing really new with her. And, yeah, her opponent that she fought, I met that lady a couple times at WrestleCon and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, it was good to see her on TV.
All right, well, enough of Godzilla there. We're going to head down to The New Day, who defeated Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson.
You know, The New Day, I don't know, I just can't help but feel that their tag title reign has got to be coming to an end at SummerSlam. I think what they're going to do, like I would have preferred to have The New Day and Enzo and Cass, and I think it would have made a better tag match, but like I said, Vince, I don't think he wants two face teams going at it. I think basically what's going to happen is the club is going to get the titles, and they're just going to be like filler champions for Enzo and Cass. Like the club is going to take the belts just to keep them warm for Enzo and Cass so they can build a heel babyface tag team match, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
It just seems like they're going that route, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I could, you know, what I could actually see is the club beating New Day at SummerSlam for the titles, then Clash of Champions. You have, obviously, all titles have to be defended, all Raw titles, so you have New Day versus the club, and the club retained by cheating, of course. It's not, then the next night on Raw, they come out, you know, the club say, well, we're probably the greatest tag team of all time. Wait, no, not probably, we are, and they're cutting this promo, and Enzo and Cass just interrupt them, drop a great promo on there, and yeah, but I think, honestly, I think the best route to go is probably what Vince wouldn't do, and that's the reason why you said that, Big T, I'm sure, because New Day versus Enzo and Cass would be something else. Can you imagine them promos?
Oh, I can only imagine, you know, like with, like both how Enzo and Cass and the New Day are, like how they're these, you know, they cut these awesome promos, but yet they do it in a comedic way. Like they could throw jabs at each other that would be absolute gold, have Enzo and Cass get one over on the New Day where people are like, oh shit, you know, these guys, Enzo and Cass, they're even owning the New Day on the mic a little bit. These guys are really for real here, and I think it could really benefit Enzo and Cass to take on the New Day and take the titles for them for two reasons. They could end the record-breaking reign of the longest tag team champs in history, number one. Number two, I think it would also get to really show off the mic skills of Enzo and Cass to be able to shut down the New Day in a back-and-forth promo war, and, you know, ultimately taking those titles. That would be the most incredible thing, and that would put Enzo and Cass over more than by beating the club. Even though the club, they're well-known around the world. These guys are no pushovers. But the thing is, you know, Enzo and Cass do promos on the club, they're going to eat the club alive. They will eat them alive. It won't even be a competition on the mic between the two teams. And I just think Enzo and Cass could get much more of a boost and be taken more seriously by taking on the New Day.
True. All right, guys. We had WWE United States Championship match, Rusev, who defeated the Olympic superstar of Mark Henry.
Well, I'll say this, you know, we've seen Mark Henry and Rusev on and off since Rusev had his first ever U.S. title reign, you know, a couple years back, you know, in 2014 going into 2015, and, you know, we've seen it, it's been done, Mark Henry has never beat Rusev. Mark Henry will never beat Rusev. I don't think Mark Henry will ever beat anybody in the WWE again. It's just, you know, it's time. Mark Henry really does. And, you know, I'm not saying this to knock Mark Henry. Like, you know, there's times when, you know, I go on the live shows on YouTube, you know, and I have a fun time and, you know, I'll throw a few jabs here and there. But, like, you know, not to knock him, like, to be in all seriousness, like, I get that he probably loves wrestling so much. I know how it feels to love the sport of professional wrestling. And he might be having a hard time coming to grips with walking away because he loves it so much. But I think Mark Henry really needs to take a look in the mirror and say to himself, like, you know, just look at himself and, like, you know, just really think, put his head in his hands, think, and take some, you know, take some time and be like, you know, I love this, but, you know, I'm well into my 40s now, and I can tell that, you know, my body is not what it, you know, it's not performing like it used to. You know, I'm not in any big match situations. I got nothing really more to offer because I already gave everything I had. And there's no shame in that. Mark Henry gave everything that he had to the business. Well, but it's time now to step away.
Speaking of time, buddy, we're gonna speed read these next couple matches and end up with the main event. Real quick, we had Titus O'Neil who defeated Eric Darren Young.
Doorway match.
The New Day defeated Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. Cesaro defeated Sheamus. And Jinder Mahal defeated Heath Slater. Yes, Jinder Mahal made his return. And in the main event, we had a fantastic bout, if you ask me. Seth Rollins defeated Sami Zayn. And then Monday Night Raw wrapped up with Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman doing a promo for SummerSlam. And Randy Orton came for his receipt and got the RKO in on Mr. Lesnar live there in Atlanta. And that was Monday Night Raw for August 1st, 2016, live from Atlanta, Georgia.
I'll tell you. What is it? Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, classic match. The other three matches that you read were pretty much all throwaway, were really irrelevant. You know, one just had Jinder Mahal coming back, but that's not, you know, that huge. Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn, one of the best matches, you know, I've seen on Raw. I mean, my God, these guys are golden together. And Paul Heyman cutting a fantastic promo with, you know, Brock Lesnar, Orton getting that RKO, a perfect way to end Raw. That was really the perfect way to end the show, the way that they did. And they couldn't do it in a better way by that RKO out of nowhere. And Orton just coming through the crowd, that security, everybody around. It was just a fantastic scene. Evan, do you got any quick notes to run through on all that?
No, not really, man. I mean, you covered it pretty well. Yeah, well, one thing I will say about the Seth Rollins Sami Zayn match, I thought it was very well done. And, I mean, you obviously know how I feel, Big T. My little, Sean, I had a little bit of a, just a tad bit of a little pipe bomb yesterday on, some people on Twitter that were saying the brand split's done now because Randy was on Raw. Overall, I thought it was good. So, yeah, if you guys want to move on to SmackDown, I'm down.
Sounds good to me, man. Right. Yeah, I definitely.
Do you got any closing notes on Raw?
Nope. Definitely not. Ready to move on to SmackDown. But like Evan said, I think guys like Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar, they've certainly earned the right to be able to invade either show if they please. Whereas the younger talent, you know what, this brand split's really more focused on them, I believe. But we had WWE SmackDown live from somewhere, I think, down south.
Memphis, Tennessee. I believe it was Memphis,
Nashville.
Tennessee. Nashville, okay.
SmackDown live in Nashville, Tennessee. And the results are as is follows. we had a number one contender, Kalisto versus Baron Corbin versus Apollo Crews. Apollo Crews is the number one contender for the Intercontinental Championship. Baron Corbin, however, left the match on top, if you do ask me. Eva Marie took on Becky Lynch, however, she had a bit of a leg injury when getting off the top apron as she was taunting the crowd. The Vaudevillains took on American Alpha, only to win in their debut match on the main roster. The American Alpha pick up the victory. And we had Randy Orton taking on Fandango, only to win the match, of course. Randy Orton did by disqualification, as Brock Lesnar gave his receipt, I should have said, to Randy Orton and F5 the hell out of Orton live on SmackDown. We also had Natalya versus Carmella, where what happened there? Natalya just walked off during the match because no one cares. Dolph Ziggler took on Bray Wyatt to maintain his number one contendership match at SummerSlam against the champion Dean Ambrose, and Dolph Ziggler did. He defeated Bray Wyatt to retain his number one contendership at SummerSlam, and that was SmackDown Live for August 2nd, 2016 from Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, I gotta tell you, with SmackDown last night, and then you guys can give your opinions on how you feel. I watched the show, and SmackDown really did do a big upgrade in 1 week's time. You know, I know a lot of us have been talking about how we really can't take Dolph Ziggler seriously because of the way WWE has treated him, you know, over the past year and a half, but I do have to tell you guys, in all honesty, what they did with Dolph Ziggler last night, they actually got me interested to want to see this match. They actually got me to buy in to Dolph Ziggler. And the fact that they built SmackDown all about Dolph Ziggler wanting to prove himself and to prove that he belongs where he is and that he deserves the spot that he has, I thought that was genius by WWE. The promo that Ziggler cut, that was a side of Dolph Ziggler. And believe me, I followed his whole career when he was back in the Spirit Squad and all that. I have never, ever at any point in Dolph Ziggler's decade-long career with the WWE, because he's been there for 10 years, out of all those years, I've never heard this side of Dolph Ziggler. I've never heard such a determined Dolph Ziggler, and I like the fact, you know, how they pointed out in the promo, like, everything that Ziggler's been through, how he was with the Spirit Squad, you know, how he's never really been on top, like, when they got to the whole part of the promo, you know, like Dean Ambrose came in with the Shield. He was like pretty much always on top, and how, you know, Dolph has been there so much longer than Dean Ambrose, and he's never really been at the top. And now he's going to take what is his. He's going to go into SummerSlam, burn the Barclays Center to the ground, and kick Dean Ambrose's ass. And I got to tell you, I love Dean Ambrose. Everybody knows that I love, you know, Dean Ambrose, but I got to tell you, my heart is with Dolph Ziggler in this match. I want to see Dolph Ziggler finally succeed. I want to see Dolph Ziggler win that title. I want to see him have a lengthy run for once, because his first reign was, what, like 10 minutes long, and then his second reign was only like a month. I want to see him get a nice lengthy run with the title, all building to WrestleMania 33, where AJ Styles gets his moment and takes the title from Ziggler. That's what I want to see. And I really, really hope that that happens, because Dolph Ziggler does deserve it. He has been a hard worker. He's had to take a lot of crap in WWE over this decade. And it's time. It is time for Dolph Ziggler to finally get that brass ring. If Vince likes to talk about grabbing that proverbial brass ring, I think that Ziggler has deserved it. I think he's got his fingertips on it. Now all they got to do is let him pull that ring down and let him grab it, let him run with it. If, you know, Vince wants to keep talking about opportunity and about the brass ring, well, then give this opportunity to Ziggler. And if they don't, then I never want to hear it come out of Vince McMahon's mouth again about opportunity and grabbing the brass ring, and that you got to step it up, because Dolph Ziggler stepped up his game last night like I've never seen before. And if that doesn't get him a title, then Vince McMahon better not ever talk about grabbing the brass ring again, because it's all political bullshit if Dolph Ziggler doesn't get that title at SummerSlam. Evan, how do you feel about SmackDown?
I thought it was a good show.
It was solid.
I felt they did a good job with Ziggler. Like I said, I think this is probably the right way to book him. In the span of 3 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever it is, it's probably the best thing you can do for the fans to get behind him. Overall, I felt it was good.
Big T, we're getting an echo, buddy.
All right, let me see. How's that?
Hello, hello? Still there.
Still there. Oh, shoot.
Evan, were you hearing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of heard it, too. I hope Google Hangouts clears it up. I moved the mic a little bit.
Hello, hello? Big T, how about if you want, just join in on your phone.
I got to stay on here because I got to work off the computer for news and rumors.
Well, you could stay on your laptop. Just use the mic from your phone, because everything we're saying is echoing, so...
I'll mute my mic while you guys talk.
No. It's your time. It's your story time.
Oh, okay. Then I'll go off of here. Because I look back on the live stream, the echo isn't coming through on the live stream. It's coming through on here.
Okay.
When you guys need to talk, though, I'll mute it so that way you don't hear it coming back on you. But,
Or you could just... You know, pretty easy fix it by joining in on your phone.
Yeah, but then no one's going to be able to see me because I can't prop it up or hold it up anywhere.
Well, you could keep your camera on.
For the video part of it. Yeah, but the camera from the computer won't go on to me. I don't know how to do that where it's on my phone.
Okay.
And then I have the phone going, and then the computer. I don't know how to get that to work.
All right, buddy.
It's stuck here. To kick off news and rumors for you guys, I'm going to start with the story that I just read a couple days ago. And this is on FoxSports.com. It's Lillian Garcia is leaving the WWE to take care of her ailing father. And this was written by Nick Schwartz. And he writes, longtime WWE ring announcer Lillian Garcia announced Monday that she is stepping away from WWE to spend time with her father, who is suffering from multiple types of cancer. Garcia missed time earlier this year when his health took a turn for the worse, but returned to work for the last few months. She wrote on Instagram that she needs to be by his side instead of constantly traveling to WWE events. Now, this is what Lillian Garcia had to say on her Instagram post. She writes, this is from Lillian Garcia directly, I have been getting a lot of tweets and messages asking where I have been and if I am coming back to the WWE. So I wanted to let you all know what has been going on and why I have been silent. I have been through so many emotions lately that they literally have kept me up at night, as most of you know. My father has been battling with two different types of cancer. He has not been doing as well as we hoped. Therefore, I will not be traveling weekly with the WWE any longer. I will be looking to take on closer, I'll take on work closer to where I live so that I do not have to be on the road weekly away from him. My father truly needs me, and I need this time with him. I ask that you please continue prayers for my father and my family. And, let's see. Goes on. It has been a magical 15-year career at the WWE and WWE Universe. I cannot thank you enough for all of your love and support. I felt you every step of the way. I also want to thank the amazing WWE superstars, whom many of them have become my friends. You are an incredible group of people with so much talent. It has been such an honor to introduce you to the ring and watch your superior athleticism week after week. Thank you to the crew and production staff on the road in the offices. I have seen you work so hard. You really are the glue that keeps it all together. Lastly, thank you, WWE, for this incredible ride that I never wanted to get off. I have had experiences beyond my imagination. I thank you for not only allowing me to use my voice as an announcer, but also sharing it to sing around the world. What an honor. I will cherish the memories forever. And Evan and Sean, what do you guys think about this? Well, I mute my mic here so you guys can talk quickly about this, and I'll move on to the next story.
Very sad. Wish her all the best, and it'll never be the same. JoJo will never fill those shoes, I'll tell you, but yep, so sad stuff.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I mean, obviously, since, like I said, I've started watching late 2008, she was always the ring announcer. She was always the Raw ring announcer for as long as I can remember, and it's gonna be, I mean, I know she wasn't towards the end here this past year or so, 2016, she has been on every time, but it's definitely not gonna sound the same within the next, you know, couple of years. I mean, JoJo, she's alright, but I mean, I don't think she'll ever be, anywhere close to what Lillian Garcia was for the WWE.
All right. Well, I got another story here. Sadly enough, about another talent that could possibly be leaving the WWE. This is on theinquisitor.com, written by Will McCormick. WWE News: Alberto Del Rio has an out clause in his WWE contract that could see him leave the WWE in September. So here's another big story. Alberto Del Rio is stuck. It is apparent that he returned to the WWE because they offered the money for his services, which is an understandable reason to return to the company. The problem Del Rio is currently dealing with is WWE does not seem to be the best fit for him anymore. Alberto and WWE just seem to be on different wavelengths about his position on WWE programming. His accolades in the WWE are a mile long. He is a 4-time WWE champion, a 2-time United States champion, Money in the Bank winner, and a Royal Rumble winner. Del Rio is the only man to win the last two in the same year. Any wrestler with his resume should not be struggling to get wins in the mid-card, but that is currently where he is after the WWE draft. Drafted to SmackDown, it seemed that it could be a good place for him to get a sizable push to become a more important part of the show. However, there have been rumors that Triple H was strongly against pushing Del Rio before the WWE draft. If that is true or not, Del Rio's character is definitely aimless on WWE programming right now, which is causing him a lot of frustration. The latest update on Alberto's frustration with his position in the WWE claimed that he could be leaving the company sooner rather than later if things do not change for his character on WWE programming. The belief is that Del Rio signed a 1-year deal last October to return to the WWE. So that would mean it would be expiring in a little over 2 months from this writing. However, there is a rumor going around that Alberto Del Rio may not be willing to wait that long. According to a report from WrestleZone.com, there is an out clause in Del Rio's contract that could be in effect in September. If Alberto decides to leave the WWE, it could be as soon as next month. While he may not make as much money as he would with the WWE, he will be featured much better and still make a ton of money elsewhere in the industry. For example, TNA Wrestling would happily throw a lot of money at Alberto Del Rio, but he does not seem to be a great fit there either. He could return to Lucha Underground, AAA, or any other promotion that would have him. Del Rio's time with the WWE is not over, so there's still time to mend that fence and give Alberto Del Rio a more prominent role on SmackDown. There are many fresh foods that could benefit him as a heel or potentially as a face. Del Rio has not been a face in the WWE since 2013. The WWE Universe has always responded better to him as a face because it seems like a more natural fit. The only singles title Alberto Del Rio has not won in the WWE is the Intercontinental Championship. The Miz is doing a very good job with it right now, but the coming months could see that change, and Del Rio versus Miz for the IC title could be a very good way for the SmackDown brand after WWE SummerSlam. There are still many creative things for Alberto Del Rio to do in the WWE. The only question is if his patience will be too thin by the time September rolls around and his out clause kicks into his WWE contract. Alberto Del Rio recently revealed he has plans to wrestle for 3 to 5 years before he officially retires. His mindset must be to lock down as much money as he can before calling it a career. So he is going to be forced to choose between making big money in the WWE with a lot of hassle or take his chances with his final years outside of the WWE. The choice will be up to him. So first off, Sean, and then Evan, how do you guys feel about this news with Alberto Del Rio?
Well, I'm definitely a fan of Alberto Del Rio, and his abilities are certainly underutilized. But you know, I think he's very 2010 to 2015. He's not. I don't see him particularly fitting in whatsoever in the new era, if you will. But I'm sure there are hundreds, if not thousands, of indie companies that would love to give him the biggest payday of the weekend if he were to go on the road with some other companies. I wish Alberto Del Rio the best, but I don't see that much of a future in the WWE, unfortunately, at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, I like Del Rio. I think he is a decent character. But I do have to agree with Sean on this one. Yeah, 2011 around was probably, I think, his best year. And then after that, I think he was sort of going downhill, and then he had that whole thing backstage and left the company on bad terms. Luckily, he was able to come back, beat Cena on his first night for the U.S. title, and that's when they should have really started to take him seriously, because I think once they put him in a League of Nations, that hurt him as well. But honestly, I did not know that Alberto Del Rio – I actually forgot. I didn't – not that I didn't know – Alberto Del Rio was on SmackDown. I think,
yeah.
I mean, if he would resign, if he wouldn't use his clause, I think, I mean, Sean, yeah, I do agree with you to an extent, but I think he could be a decent Intercontinental or WWE champion. Not great, decent.
Well, I think he could be great, personally. I think Alberto Del Rio is a nasty heel. He's very believable. He's damn talented. But what I mean is that WWE is not going to go there. I just don't see that being in its vision. But, you know, anything could freaking happen at this point after seeing Sheamus win the championship last November. I mean, I don't put faith in anything anymore after that happened.
Yeah, I mean, like, I honestly, what I see happening with the IC title, I see Apollo Crews beating Miz at SummerSlam, if not SummerSlam. I do see him getting another match and beating him at Backlash, so I think that's the direction for the IC title. But yeah, I do agree with you. I think the most likely title for him to go after is the IC one, and there's just no real good spot to put him in. So I think probably the best thing for him, and I think WWE, is just leave. I think he should go back to Lucha. I don't really think TNA is a good fit for him, as the article said. But yeah, I mean, I wish him the best, and I hope whatever decision he makes, I hope he believes it's the right decision.
Well, I'm gonna throw in my two cents here. First off, for Lillian Garcia, same here. I think about, you know, what you guys said, and you know, JoJo will never be able to fill those shoes, and I wish her the best, and we hope to see her back someday. With Alberto Del Rio, yeah, I mean, WWE, I wish they would treat him better, because when he was WWE champion and world champion, like, you know, he was on a roll winning titles, he was a top guy, and, you know, WWE, they've been dropping the ball with him, and I would not blame Del Rio if he were to leave. And I got a few more stories here. I got one coming up about Jeff Hardy possibly making a return. I got another one coming up about Vince McMahon giving up on Roman Reigns' push. And I got another one, the main event story about John Cena possibly going on hiatus here. So we're going to roll this along. And I'm sure this is something that's going to excite everybody listening. I mean, this is an incredible, incredible story. This is on, you know, all kinds of sites, all the wrestling sites. The biggest article I found here is on Forbes.com, and this is written by Anthony DeMauro. And Jeff Hardy wants to return to the WWE, and he wants to retire with the WWE, but how does he want to go out? Well, let me tell you this. This is absolutely would be one of the most breathtaking matches. Jeff Hardy wants to go out, you know, he wants to end his career, but not until he wants to face The Undertaker at WrestleMania 33 in a Hell in a Cell match. And let's go on with this story. It is never too early for WrestleMania speculation. With the recent brand split in the WWE and the new presentation of the Raw and SmackDown shows, there is plenty of free agent talks as to which ring veterans will go to WWE to join Raw, SmackDown, or NXT in the coming months. All right, so let's see as we scroll down here. Okay, many of those names are not just free agents, as in the case with current TNA superstar Jeff Hardy. While Hardy is contracted to TNA until February of 2017, he spoke with LA Weekly recently and let them know that he would love to end his career in a WWE ring, and he wants to face one of their greatest legends, The Undertaker. Now, this is a quote directly from Mr. Jeff Hardy himself. Just this first part, just listen to this. He wants to face The Undertaker in that Hell in a Cell match. Oh, my God, this is just this first part of the quote here. It just gives me chills thinking about it. Jeff Hardy says, man, I want to swanton bomb off the top of the Hell in a Cell onto the commentary table, Hardy said. Then I want to climb the cell cut. He's got an expletive, so be prepared. He says, I want to cut the fucking cage. And then he says, when Taker is back in the ring, and Swanton through the cage, miss. And then Taker hits the tombstone. 1, 2, 3. While Hardy states his clear desire to wrestle his final match in a WWE ring, he is unable to work a full-time schedule, and that may be unappealing to WWE. However, Hardy said that he is perfectly content remaining in the WWE for good. And another quote from Jeff Hardy here, he says, Matt and I are doing some great stuff in TNA right now, so I will be happy to stay here until the end if that is how it works out. So he's saying that if WWE doesn't want him, he'll be happy staying with TNA, but in all reality, he really wants to go back to the WWE. Now, it goes on here. It is not crazy to think that the WWE would be open to a Jeff Hardy return on a part-time schedule, as they do so with a good number of veteran performers and have done so in the past. WWE would likely love the addition of Hardy, who still remains a popular name in the industry and was extremely popular during his time with the WWE. Now, Hardy has often alluded to a goal to top Shane McMahon's high-risk jump off the Hell in a Cell cage during his match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 32 inside Hell in a Cell, and has again let people know he wants to accomplish that goal. There is not a slew of big names that The Undertaker could face at Mania that he has not faced before, and it is unlikely there is one besides John Cena that would generate more interest and buzz than a returning Jeff Hardy. WWE is on the hunt for big talent to help fill their Raw, SmackDown, and NXT rosters, and Hardy fits the bill as a big potential free agent that would help bring a lot of eyes to WWE programming and a lot of buzz around the industry. Hardy's name, according to the source, is one that WWE is indeed interested in and will explore once Hardy does close out his current TNA deal. Hardy versus Undertaker at WrestleMania 33 may not happen, and it may not happen before Undertaker or Jeff Hardy retires. But the likelihood of Hardy going back home to the WWE seems to improve as the days until his TNA deal expires, and the countdown is on. So we shall see what happens. I mean, me for one, I would love to see it. I would love to see Jeff Hardy climb that cell, hit the Swanton on the outside through the announce table. You know, Taker gets back in the ring after they're down for a while. He gets back in the ring. Jeff Hardy's cutting the cage up top, and then he goes for the Swanton, you know, on the top, but through the cage and misses, and then Taker would hit the tombstone. Absolutely incredible stuff. I would definitely be down to see that any day of the week. I am not against it. I am all for it. And I really wish that WWE would pull the trigger on it, especially after hearing how Jeff Hardy would want to try to top Shane McMahon's moment with the leap of faith off the Hell in a Cell cage at WrestleMania 32. And for Jeff Hardy to be willing to go to those lengths to give us that kind of entertainment, and for him to have Taker get the win yet after going through all that, it shows to me that Jeff Hardy's a stand-up guy and he just wants this match. He wants a Hell in a Cell because he's never been in it before. And I know him and Undertaker have had some magical matches before, and no doubt they could recapture that magic, and I think that would be one of the best ways to go. Now, first off, Sean, and then Evan, how do you guys feel about this? Because this is some groundbreaking stuff right here.
Well, it would definitely be cool to see Jeff Hardy back. But do I think it'll actually happen? No. I think he's ruined that opportunity with his own choices, and unfortunately for Jeff Hardy, there's consequences for those choices. Is it a dream match? Yes, of course, but I think it's simply just that, a dream. I highly doubt that The Undertaker would even want that match, honestly. I don't think, as crazy as it sounds, Jeff Hardy is one of those guys that while he is a main eventer, at the same time, he's not to the level of Shane McMahon or Sting or Triple H or someone like that. He's almost like an eternal mid-carder. And hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I think if Undertaker could take on Bray Wyatt or, Giant Gonzalez for that matter. Of course, that was a long time ago before the legend was created, but I don't think it's going to happen. And it sort of makes me scared for Jeff Hardy because he has these crazy dreams that, but yet he's stuck on TNA, which very few people even get to see because of distributioning and everything. And it's almost like, I'm sure he's strong at where he is right now. I just hope he can maintain that stability and that sobriety throughout what probably will be a WWE-less future for both of the Hardy boys.
Yeah, I mean, I have to disagree with you on this one, Sean. I do believe that Jeff Hardy will return to WWE eventually, maybe not right after his contract with TNA expires, but I mean, there's no guarantees. I'm not saying he's going to be at WrestleMania 33, but however, even if Jeff Hardy returns tomorrow, if he somehow gets out of that TNA contract and signs a deal with WWE tomorrow, there's no way that they're having Undertaker versus Jeff Hardy at WrestleMania. I would love it, but like I said, like Sean said, I don't think Undertaker would want the match. Jeff Hardy obviously would, as he explained, but I also, Big T said it would be awesome to see the Swanton Bomb off of the top of the cage and then another through the cage. Yes, it would be awesome to see, but I would want to see it, but I wouldn't want to see it. Because Jeff Hardy was always one of my favorites. He'll always be my top 10 favorite wrestlers of all time. I was at Night of Champions 2009 in Philadelphia when he beat CM Punk for the World Heavyweight Championship, the big gold belt. That was an unbelievable time for me. I was so glad to be there. But yeah, it was a great experience. But I worry if they do that spot, I worry about the safety of Jeff Hardy. And I don't think it's a good idea. And I don't think, even if they had the match, that would be great. I don't think Vince would approve it. I really don't think Vince would approve it. It's too much of a safety risk. Too many things could happen. Too much of a risk.
I could definitely see your point, Evan. No doubt. I mean, the risk there is incredible. And if Taker would actually take the bump off the cell from Jeff Hardy, I don't even know if Taker could take the bump. And, you know, that's just, you know, very fearful in itself. So, I mean, I agree with your point, Evan. I agree with Sean's point, too, in the fact that, yes, Jeff Hardy has his demons, and, you know, with everything that has happened over the years, you know, when he was in WWE, you know, he's been paying for those consequences for a long time. And, you know, now with the wellness policy in place, even though Jeff Hardy's been clean and we all pray he could stay clean, I just don't know if WWE is just going to let him back in the door.
Jeff Hardy is a big-time felon. He was convicted of drug trafficking more than hundreds of painkillers. I mean, this guy is not going to get back in those WWE doors. Do I think he's a bad person? No. He made mistakes, yeah, but WWE being a publicly traded company is not going to have some former convicted felon and drug trafficker on their roster. Dream on.
I do think they will.
It's a tough one, guys. It really is.
It's too big of a liability. This guy is a convicted drug trafficker.
Yeah, Sean, how long has it been clean for?
A good question. I don't know. But what I'm saying is a publicly traded company cannot have that going on because their shareholders would never be cool with that. And their PG image, trust me, dude, I like Jeff Hardy. I grew up, you know, just like you did with Jeff Hardy, but, you know, shit got really bad, and he's blacklisted, essentially.
I don't know, man. I guess time will tell.
I hope you're right. Trust me, I do. But the logistics of it are impossible.
And I, you know what, I'm in the same boat. I really do hope that Evan's right. I want him to be right. I want WWE to let Hardy back in. But yeah, with the shareholders and everything, it's so tough. It's a very touchy situation, and I hope that when time does tell that we will have Jeff Hardy back in the ring. Now, I'm nearing my last two stories. I got the Roman Reigns story, and I got the John Cena story. So we're gonna knock these out here. And, you know, this is something about WWE possibly ending Roman Reigns' push. And, this is on WrestlingNews.com. Now, shocking, because perhaps in the WWE universe, including myself, naturally thought the WWE would continue their massive push of Roman Reigns. After all, he remained at Battleground's main event despite a 30-day suspension, which was reportedly because of Adderall, a drug that helps with ADHD and is often illegally used to assist people when it comes to focus. Now, Roman Reigns, he landed at number 6 in the WWE draft before John Cena, Brock Lesnar, and Randy Orton. Not too shabby. His return at a house show not only hit pro wrestling sites everywhere, it hit WWE.com. All arrows were pointing to a big Roman Reigns return. A continued push as if all sins were instantly forgiven. And, you know, hey, the WWE, they have invested a lot in Roman Reigns. And to let one little suspension stop their momentum, But then, Roman Reigns got pinned in the Shield Triple Threat match. Now, you know, I really wasn't expecting him to win. But I wasn't per se expecting him to be pinned, according to this writer. And cleanly at that, then once again as WWE teased potential redemption for Reigns on Raw, a new opportunity, a new chance at a new title, he once again got pinned cleanly by Finn Balor, who debuted that night, no less. Now, while WWE has talked a big game about a new era, they undoubtedly proved that they were serious about it. Not only Battleground, but Raw and SmackDown the following nights. And Roman Reigns losing two nights in a row and offering such a big push for Finn Balor proved that they were not kidding. Now, the fact that Roman Reigns has lost his push privileges is not so shocking because he has been gone for 30 days because of said suspension. Regardless of the reason, as always, the WWE needs to set an example for all talent. Still, do I think that his push, you know, to be lessened? Absolutely, of course. This is coming from someone who has always been a supporter for the guy, so this writer supported Roman Reigns. However, I was also quite disappointed when I read the news that he had violated the WWE's wellness policy. At the end of the day, he was 30 days away from television, then 30 days away from house shows, and tons of fans, you know, little ones, disappointed that they would not get to see their hero. And, you know, after talking with many in the circle here, I'm sure that there were many others in the house show dates that he had missed. Roman Reigns, a role model, disappointed his fans, and there is no real way to make it up to them. Now, everyone makes mistakes, whether you are Roman Reigns or, you know, just a regular Joe Schmo working in office or even a simple pro wrestling journalist. We all make mistakes. We cringe at mistakes. We learn from mistakes, and we move on from mistakes. Still, Roman Reigns gets paid a pretty penny and lives a life some can only dream of. He gets paid very well to know better, and with WWE brass so high on him and a certain demographic so against him, he should have known better. It is like the straw that broke the camel's back. It almost opened the floodgates to give WWE a reason to lessen their push. And Roman Reigns made it so easy for his haters in this regard. And, you know, will he be buried forever? You know, that's something that we'll have to see. But a little less push and a placement in the mid-card for a while will not hurt him. A revamp of his character, reclimbing the ladder, might even help. So what happens now? You know, hopefully Roman Reigns lays low for a while and well past WrestleMania 33. There's just something about the Royal Rumble and main eventing WrestleMania that seems to bring the Raw and pay-per-view crowds rumbling. No matter what Reigns' momentum is into either of these events, it is vital for the WWE to hold Roman back and wait a little while. Roman is already a three-time WWE champion, and at the young age of 31 years old, he has so much time in front of him to do many things and hit many other milestones. The best thing for him to do now is to work hard, stay humble, and prove to his fans, the naysayers, and the wrestling journalists what he is really made of. If there is anything that he is made of, it is easy to ride the high wave and take in all the amazing things that are handed to someone. It is a humbling experience to fall flat on your face and pick the pieces up, and it defines the difference between a successful talent who really cares and loves what they do, has passion for the business and what it is all about, and someone who is just sliding by. In the next year, the WWE Universe will bear witness, let's see, to who Roman Reigns really is. Will he come out fighting, or will he work on his character and in-ring style and mic skills? Will he shine, or will he simply float along in mid-card status? Will he fail completely and become irrelevant? Only time will tell. But for now, what is best for business and best for Roman is for him to lay low and hang tight. If he is meant for greatness, then, you know, he will have to work on his skills, make himself great, and, you know, see if he could rise again. But I totally agree with that fact that Roman Reigns, he really has to try to work hard and reinvent himself now. Change his character. Maybe turn heel. You know, do something, because if he doesn't, with WWE devaluing his push as we just read, if Roman Reigns don't work on something, this could very well be the end of Roman Reigns. Sean and then Evan, what do you guys think about this whole Roman Reigns situation after hearing about the push being lessened, and, you know, what do you think is going to happen? Is Roman going to sink, or is he going to rise back up from the ashes?
Well, I think WWE is in a really precarious spot. When I was at Battleground, I never heard louder booing in my life for Roman Reigns, but I'll tell you, I was sitting next to about a kid who I guess was in like 6th or 7th grade, he said, and he was all for Roman Reigns, and all pretty much like the little kids around me were all for Roman Reigns. But I think by the end of the night, they sort of realized, like, wow, everyone else hates Roman Reigns. Maybe there's something to this. And you know what? Like you said, Roman Reigns gave everyone who did hate him, who does hate him, the perfect reason and explanation as to why they do hate him. There's just something off about him. And, you know, he was a drug abuser or what have you, if the drug tests show that, which reports say that they did. And he's not a stand-up guy like WWE needs to have in that type of position, like John Cena, Finn Balor, or Seth Rollins. He's just not. And I even almost think that this Rusev U.S. Championship match is too good for him. I think, personally, if it's in your contract, you know, you can't use drugs, and you get caught using drugs, it's not like being late for work one day, which I was today. You know, those are innocent mistakes that you can't prevent. What you can prevent is picking up a drug and taking it. No one forces you to do that. And if they do, then that's a whole other crime of an issue. But when it comes to drugs, you have a choice, a not so innocent choice to do it. And Roman Reigns chose to do it, well knowingly that his career was on the line if he did it. And I think WWE is personally too lenient in the fact that they let their talent have two strikes, and then the third one they're fired. I think it should be the first time you test positive for a drug when you're making that much money and that many kids all over the world look up to you, you're toast. You're yesterday's news, you're gone. I think that should have been Roman Reigns' fate. I think that this U.S. Championship is even too good for him. I don't want to see him anymore. He makes me sick.
Wow, that's definitely some strong words there, Sean. You know, I do agree with you to an extent there. I do believe that, yeah, the innocent mistakes are being late for work, messing up a little paper you gotta do for your boss, messing up a couple words there. They're all innocent mistakes that, you know, you can't control. You know, there's different reasons for everything, but something you can control is what you do and what you take. Okay? You see, you know, I don't know if this happened. I mean, this probably happens with a lot of guys. He knows they have to wrestle a match the next night. He goes out to the bar. He's drinking. And he knows he's putting that stuff in his body. He knows what it can do. And that is one of the biggest mistakes of all is drugs and alcohol. I mean, that'll get you out of the business as quickly as possible. Sean, your reference, and probably my reference, Jeff Hardy. Drugs and alcohol are a quick way to get you out. It's not a good look. And like you said, the fans hate Roman Reigns. I'm not exactly 100% sure why. I can't really put my finger on it, but.
Because the fans could pick up that he is, not a stand-up guy like Cena or like Balor or even like Rollins who plays a heel, but in real life, he's a fantastic person. The fans picked up on that. The fans realized that this guy's shifty and shady and up to no good, and he proved us all right by, testing positive for those drugs. When you have this responsibility, when you're getting paid that much money, it's not one big party anymore. You have other people's lives when you're wrestling in the ring. And if you're abusing drugs and God forbid you have some sort of, drug-related, illness that happens in the ring, you drop someone while you're power bombing them. They're dead because they landed on their neck and it's your fault because you abused drugs.
Yeah. And you're wanted for murder. So,
and it's the WWE's fault for, hiring a drug addict or a drug user, a drug abuser. And
yeah.
Sure, Roman Reigns could probably say, oh, I made a mistake. He hasn't even come out on TV and apologized. He doesn't give a shit.
No, yeah, you're right. He really hasn't. And, I mean, you know, I got two words. I mean, I'll backtrack that. You know how in the article they said they should just, you know, revamp him, make him go to the top again? That's the wrong way. I got two words for you. Heel turn. I think it is the only way to go. Fans are already booing him. Why not give them even more reason to boo him? Why not?
I got one word. Rehab.
That's a good point. But seeing as this is his first and only offense so far, I don't know. I think rehab's a little extreme. But, I mean, obviously, you know, different people handle different situations. I for one, I don't believe in a three-strike rule. I do believe there should be a two-strike. I don't think there should be a one-and-done because, like, nobody's perfect. Everybody knows that. People make mistakes. I'm sure he will come out. I mean, he came out on Twitter and said, I made a mistake. That's what everybody says.
Well, this is the thing. Going to work late's a mistake. Choosing to do drugs, that's negligence, and that's just when you're getting paid that much money and you have that much responsibility on you, if you can't get it together, then you don't deserve to have that job because there's thousands of other people in that in this country that are just as qualified but don't have that job.
Yeah, I definitely get what you're saying.
With great jobs and great paychecks come great responsibility, and I think it's embarrassing that WWE has this black mark on them now thanks to Roman Reigns' personal choices that do not reflect someone that I would want my kids to look up to.
Yeah, I mean, and I actually want to bring up a story to you guys. It's non-wrestling, just really quick. I want to see if Sean thinks this is a mistake or this is a problem. It's a Buccaneers linebacker. His name's Quan Alexander. He was a rookie last year. He was doing very, very solid. He was drafted in the fourth round. No matter what you say, Sean, just say what you're thinking, man. If you think he made a mistake or he has a problem, I don't care. I'm not gonna get angry at you. I'm not one of those guys who thinks, you know, that every one of my teams are gonna win the championship every year. I'm a realist like that. I know realistic expectations for my team, and I'm not scared for somebody saying something about a guy that's on my team. Yes, he's one of my favorite players, but I don't really care. So, late in the season, Quan Alexander was suspended the four games by the NFL for PED use. Now, the PED was from an energy drink that he took, and he did not know, and he has proof that it was from the energy drink, and he did not know it was in the energy drink. He's made a statement. He's come out publicly and said this. The coaches, players have all came out publicly and said this. And he got suspended for the last four games of his rookie season. Do you think this is a mistake or a problem? And he's been clean ever since.
Well, I definitely think it's in need of an investigation, you know, by the NFL. Now, personally, I understand. Trust me. I'm not perfect. No one's perfect. But all I'm trying to say is, with great jobs come great responsibility, and with great responsibility, sometimes you get the tough end of the stick and you make a mistake or you don't even know you make a mistake and, you know, shit happens. But with the Bucks player there, I don't know how the NFL does things personally. And trust me, if people do make a mistake, I want them to make it right. And come out on top and have a good story from it. Because that's what's that's what's great about this country. That's what's great about life is you can mess up, but you get second chances. So obviously I hope for the Bucks player, it works out for him and he gets to play this year. But, you know, I guess there's nothing you could really do with it at this point. That's the decision the NFL made. Do I think it's right? Well, probably not. If it's some marijuana energy drink or something, then
yeah, it was some type of steroid.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they investigated it and they came to the conclusion that they had to come to. But
yeah,
as far as drug use in professional sports and sports entertainment, I understand it happens. I just think that the people that do it need to self-discipline a lot better. And understand that it's not worth it. And, you've come way too far to lose it all for, an hour of fun. Bottom line. I'd love to hear what Big T has to say about this. And then, dive right into the John Cena story. And I don't know if we're going to have time for the top 10, but we'll definitely try and fit it in here today.
Thing with this, like with Roman Reigns, you know, like, according, I guess, to what he has stated, or I guess, you know, things of this nature, I guess from what's being assumed, I don't think it's been confirmed, but I guess what's being assumed is that, well, he didn't have a prescription, so I guess maybe not assumed, I guess maybe sort of proven here. You know, he didn't have a prescription for Adderall, and he knows specifically that if you take a prescription drug, if you have a prescription from a doctor, you show it to the WWE, then it's okay. You can take that medication. You're fine. But he did not have a prescription, which means he probably took this Adderall, you know, from probably a friend or...
Oh, and by the way...
Yep.
Adderall... it doesn't show up on a drug test. Oh, you took Adderall? It shows up in a drug test as the same family as any methamphetamine. So he could say that it was Adderall, but for all the WWE know, it could have been a lot heavier of a drug. And especially not having a prescription, it's a big unknown.
That is a great point right there. Thank you, Sean, for throwing that in. Yeah, that does bring more mystery to the situation. I mean, first off, okay, like, I definitely agree with Sean's point, but if we're going to take Roman Reigns at his word, which I don't even know how valuable it is, to be honest with you, you know, if he took Adderall, number one, I don't see how he would even get a prescription for it, because I don't think he has ADHD, at least to my knowledge, and if he would take it without having ADHD... You heard in the article, it's like a performance enhancer that helps you focus. Now, to me, if that's the reason why he took it, to help him focus, like for matches or things that he's doing, that's like cheating. And if you can't focus on your match or your storyline or your promo or what you're supposed to do, and you know, you got the top spot in the business, then you should not be there. Boom. Get knocked to the back of the line. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out, because, you know, you have no business being there if that's the case. But to move into the John Cena story, I've heard a couple reports. First off, John Cena is not going to be involved in Backlash on September 11th because the WWE is going to be in China. So he's going to have Backlash off, which I think that's not good for SmackDown. But moving on, could John Cena have more time off going forward? I read a recent report that in October of this year, same as last year when John Cena had to leave, in October, there's rumors going around that, like I said, nothing's concrete, but there's rumors going around that American Grit got picked up for another season, and John Cena might have to step away, you know, through the holidays from October all the way till probably the end of December, beginning of January is where he would come back again. So he'd be off for like 3 months to film a potential second season of American Grit, just like he did last year. And for John Cena to be off of SmackDown, if this happens for that period of time, I think that's going to hurt SmackDown. But, you know, I'm just thinking with John Cena taking this hiatus, I could see AJ Styles beating John Cena at SummerSlam clean, because they need a face on SmackDown to build. Whether or not this is true, we are not 100% sure as of yet. When confirmation comes through, I'll report on the story and tell you whether or not it has been confirmed. But I just to think of John Cena being away for 3 months again throughout the whole fall into the winter and then come back after the holidays, I just think that's really going to make SmackDown to suffer, you know, suffer to some degree. And, you know, they really better start building up guys like Dolph Ziggler. You take the advantage and build Ziggler up now and really start building up AJ Styles, because you're going to need these guys to step up to the plate and hit a home run. If indeed John Cena does need to step away for another 3 months, how do you, Sean, and how do you, Evan, feel about that?
Well, I think it's unfortunate for SmackDown. I think it's unfortunate for the WWE. I find it interesting John Cena just said last night on SmackDown, he gets asked all the time by the mainstream press, now that you're gone mainstream, how long will you be remaining in the WWE? And he laughs and says, I'm going to be here forever. But now we're reading this report, so it's like, does forever not include, you know, September through December anymore? I don't get it, but, you know, I'd like to think John Cena will be there in some way forever. I think it would be a shame for him to go the way of The Rock and, you know, totally sell out, but, you know, sometimes life takes you in different directions, and John Cena very well could have some other opportunities come up, but I think it's safe to say he'll always have some involvement with the WWE so long as possible. I guess that just doesn't include September through December, but I just want to see American Grit. I haven't got to see any episodes this year. Maybe season 2 I'll actually get to see some. Maybe it's a good show. I heard the ratings aren't too great, but, you know, sometimes the best shows in the world don't have ratings to show for it. So hopefully he does good in his future endeavors.
Yeah, I definitely have to... I have to agree with both of you to say, you know, this is going to hurt Backlash. And, you know, John Cena's promo now kind of makes sense, but kind of doesn't. Because just like you said, Sean, I mean, does forever not mean September to December? Does it mean all the other ones? I don't really understand that statement now, especially since this report came out. I mean, you've seen him on the Today Show and American Grit and the Teen Choice Awards and the ESPYs, all these different things. And, you know, I hope he doesn't go the way of The Rock. As I think Big T knows, I'm not sure if Sean knows, I'm not the biggest Cena fan, but if Cena were to leave the WWE, I hope it wouldn't be the way of The Rock. Do movies and come back, you know, come back once a year at WrestleMania. I really hope he stays. I think he can probably be like a decent, I think, like general manager, like some type of higher ranking, you know. Probably not for a John Cena type character, but maybe like an announcer, who knows, you know. So there's a lot of different things they can do with it, but yeah, I just hope I hope everything works out for WWE and John Cena in the long run. But you can't help but think WWE Backlash will suffer and WWE SmackDown will suffer, and that's just a shame. But you know, John Cena's doing what he thinks is best for him, and WWE's okay with it. So let it be.
Yeah, like WWE, he's got to ask Vince, you know, if he could take the time off, and you know. Vince always seems to approve, and, you know, the whole thing is I think this is how it'll go. The live event in China will happen at Backlash. Then sometime after Backlash, Cena will come back, probably compete at the pay-per-view in October, whether it be Hell in a Cell or I forgot the other pay-per-view they're having in October. It'll be one of the October pay-per-views, and he would probably take a loss again like he did to Alberto Del Rio last October and then disappear if he does indeed take that hiatus. But now with all that talk, with news and rumors out of the way, Sean, what do you got for us on the countdown here?
Well, man, I just want to say that was a great selection in news and rumors.
Thank you.
No problem. I don't know if you'd be able to mute because I'm still hearing an echo. Unfortunately, Google Plus has it out for us. We're definitely going to
Definitely. When you're reading the countdown, yeah, I'll go ahead and mute the mic and take us into a great countdown here, buddy.
All right, I'm going to dive right into it right here. We got, you know, a lot of times we focus on the Attitude Era. We focus on even the beginnings of the Ruthless Aggression Era. And, you know, now a lot lately we've been focusing on the new era, but some... one era in particular, the past decade, gets overlooked a lot. And I thought it would be cool to pay tribute as we end the last decade and begin the new era, the next decade, with a look back at the 10 best WWE pay-per-views from the past decade. Perfect timing to begin the next era, which I think is really going to kick off once SummerSlam starts. Right now, we're just pretty much in like the sampling, taste testing type period. So here we go with a look back at the 10 best WWE pay-per-views of the past decade. WhatCulture.com provides the following list. Starting next month, WWE is expanding its pay-per-view schedule, while the big four pay-per-views, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series, will feature matches from both Raw and SmackDown. Each brand will have an additional 8 pay-per-views per year. That's a grand total of 20 of the events each calendar year, which wouldn't be possible in the days before the WWE Network, back when pay-per-views were sold a la carte at high prices. In those days, prior to February of 2014, pay-per-views were becoming an increasingly unviable prospect for the company. And it was their own fault, the failure to build up exciting storylines, which fans wanted to spend the money to see resolved, meant that buy rates were collapsing, and at $50 a pop, even the above-average shows often were not worth the money. As disappointing as some pay-per-views have been, though, there have always been the outliers, the ones that really delivered everything that was promised and much, much more. Such shows, the rare mixes of great in-ring action and compelling story advancement, are few and far between, but they've won their places in the hearts of hardcore wrestling fans. And at the very least, we've got our money's worth. Here are the 10 best WWE pay-per-views from the past decade. And by the way, I'd like to thank Scott Fried of WhatCulture.com, who is the contributor to this countdown article. Number 10, TLC 2012. Definitely remember this one. I do believe this was the first pay-per-view I got back into the WWE after about an 8-year hiatus myself. TLC 2012 was a strong show all around, certainly the strongest under the TLC banner, but it's most notable because it played host to the debuts of all three members of The Shield. Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose had arrived in WWE 1 month earlier, attacking Ryback at Survivor Series and helping CM Punk retain the WWE Championship. The big guy, looking for revenge, enlisted the help of Daniel Bryan and Kane, collectively known as Team Hell No. Nobody knew exactly what to expect from their 6-man showdown, which was the first ever TLC match to be fought to a pinfall or submission. What we got, though, was one of the wildest brawls in company history. The Shield took Ryback out early, powerbombing him through a table, then got rid of Kane when Reigns speared him through the guardrail. The babyfaces fought back, with Ryback throwing Rollins off of a ladder through a pair of tables, but in the end, Reigns and Ambrose powerbombed Bryan to pick up the win, and the Shield had arrived. Elsewhere on the show, Dolph Ziggler defeated John Cena in a dramatic ladder match for Ziggler's Money in the Bank briefcase. This finish came when AJ Lee, Cena's supposed romantic interest, turned on him to help the show off secure the victory. So that was number 10, TLC 2012. And of course, I knew this would be on the list. My favorite WrestleMania in a long time, baby. Number 9, WrestleMania 31, live from Santa Clara, California. On paper, WrestleMania 31 looked like a relatively weak card. The main event featured a babyface challenger, whom fans hated, and the most hyped match on the show was between two middle-aged men with a particularly manufactured-seeming animosity. In actuality, the show became one of the most acclaimed WrestleManias ever. It started out with an exciting 7-way ladder match that saw fan favorite Daniel Bryan capture the IC Championship and then went straight into Seth Rollins' Randy Orton bout that was boasted as one of the most shocking finishes in company history. A hot tag team title match on the pre-show and a strong John Cena Rusev U.S. title bout rounded out a solid undercard. Just imagine that. You have John Cena as an undercard match. I mean, what does that tell you about a pay-per-view in the last 10 years? Not many have that to say. John Cena helped with the undercard. That just goes to show how fantastic WrestleMania 31 was, in my personal opinion. But the real news was the main event. Even though fans were firmly behind Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns fought his heart out to take it to the Beast in a hard-hitting contest. He looked to be the first man in a long time to give Lesnar some real trouble, and when neither man would relent, the unthinkable happened when Seth Rollins ran to the ring with his Money in the Bank briefcase in tow, cashed it in, and joined the match, making it a triple threat match. The relatively fresh star was able to hit Reigns with the curb stomp, pin him for the title, not only defeating Reigns, but also defeating Brock Lesnar in a triple threat match, leaving everyone stunned and making WrestleMania history in California back in the year 2015. What a classic. Number 8, Payback 2014. I do remember this. I love this event too. It always stands out to me as one of the best I've ever seen. Following WrestleMania 30, the two main conflicts in WWE were John Cena versus Bray Wyatt and Triple H versus The Shield. While both of these storylines were advanced at Extreme Rules, it wasn't until Payback they'd be resolved. And in spectacular fashion, no less, when The Shield turned on the Authority, Triple H called Evolution buddies Randy Orton and Batista to take the upstart trio, and The Shield scored the win at Extreme Rules. When Reigns pinned Batista and Evolution wasn't done, at Payback, the stables clash one final time in a no-holds-barred elimination six-man tag team match. This bout was an all-out war. Full-on weaponry and unbelievable action saw The Shield score a clean sweep over the Evolution, asserting their dominance once and for all. Cena and Wyatt, who had been at odds with each other since the Royal Rumble, had split a pair of victories, leading into the last man standing match at Payback. The contest was also a wild brawl, with Eric Rowan and Luke Harper attacking Big Match John, only to be challenged by the Usos. Amidst all the interference and chaos, Cena hit Wyatt with an AA through a crate, keeping him down for the 10 count. Number 7, No Mercy 2007. In a pro wrestling, compelling stories are just as important as in-ring action and just as vital in the creation of a good show. No Mercy 2007 was one of the most unusual WWE pay-per-views of all time, showed just how valuable drama can be. The main event of the show was slated to be John Cena defeating the WWE Championship against Randy Orton in a last-man-standing match, but on the go-home Raw, Cena suffered a torn pectoral muscle. The title was vacated, with Vince McMahon promising a new champion at No Mercy. When the pay-per-view opened, McMahon and Raw General Manager William Regal announced that due to Randy Orton's status as number one contender, he was officially named the new WWE Champion. An angered Triple H came out to confront the Viper, leading to an impromptu title match between the two men. Only 15 minutes after becoming the champion, Orton lost the title to The Game Triple H. Triple H, meanwhile, was supposed to take on Umaga, so McMahon said that the match was still on, with the title now on the line. Triple H scored a quick win with the pedigree, but his evening wasn't over yet, as McMahon informed him that Orton was invoking his rematch clause, and they'd clash in the main event in a last-man-standing match. The bout was an excellent contest, potentially the best singles match of Orton's career, and they brawled around the ring and pulled out all the stops, but ultimately Orton was victorious. When Triple H tried to pedigree him, on the announcer's table, or in reversed it into an RKO, and the game was put down for the count, and Orton was the WWE champion once again for the second time of No Mercy 2007. Now, number six, another one I was glad to see, Money in the Bank 2013. No pay-per-view event in WWE's library is as safe a bet to deliver the goods as Money in the Bank. The multi-man ladder match are almost as always excellent, and that's usually enough to make the show a thumbs up. 2013's edition, though, was even better than a typical Money in the Bank card. The two ladder matches for the contract for a World Heavyweight title shot and the other for the contract for the WWE title had both interesting setups. The World Heavyweight title bout, which opened consistently entirely of heels, though many expected U.S. champion Dean Ambrose to walk away the winner, Damian Sandow retrieved the briefcase, defeating Ambrose, Swagger, Cesaro, Fandango, Wade Barrett, and his best friend Cody Rhodes to reign supreme. The main event of the show was a Money in the Bank match for the WWE Championship shot, and it was comprised entirely of former world champions Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Sheamus, Randy Orton, Christian, and the returning Rob Van Dam all battled in one of the best Money in the Bank matches ever. A bout that saw Paul Heyman turn on Punk, Sheamus suffer a shoulder injury, and Randy Orton capture the case. Those bouts plus an undercard filled with solid matches made a true winner of the show. Now we're into the top five, so let's hear if Big T or Evan have anything to say as we go along our top five here after this one. SummerSlam 2013, man oh man, what a classic that was. Sounds to me like 2013 was just a standout year as far as the last decade goes. SummerSlam 2013 may have gone off to an inauspicious start when the opening contest of a Ring of Fire bout between Bray Wyatt and Kane is better off forgotten, but two of the best matches of the year ended up creating a can't-miss show. In the main event, John Cena defeated the WWE champion against his hand-picked opponent, Daniel Bryan. Though the build to the match got a little muddled with the involvement of the McMahon family, the bout itself was nothing short of excellent. Bryan showed all the skill that made him the best wrestler in the world, and Cena was right there with him the whole way. In the end, Bryan debuted his running knee finisher to clearly pin Cena for the belt, then was immediately swerved by special guest referee Triple H, who helped Money in the Bank winner Randy Orton beat him for the title. The other major match was a battle of the past and present Paul Heyman guys as CM Punk took on Brock Lesnar. Though Punk got a lot of offense in on Lesnar to the point where the match felt noticeably unrealistic in places, it was a wild 25-minute filled with nonstop action. Some people even preferred this bout to the main event. With those great battles plus a very good Alberto Del Rio Christian match, made for one hell of a SummerSlam 2013.
Definitely a solid first five there, man. I mean, 2013 definitely was a solid year what I'm hearing, and it's so great to have these memories brought back. I'm really enjoying it. Evan, you got any words on this first half of the list?
Yeah, man. I mean, 2013, it was definitely a great year for WWE as a whole, with the whole Daniel Bryan moving up thing and him getting over and getting real hot, and the Shield being pretty hot and everything like that. It's been a great list so far, and I agree with most of these pay-per-views are on the list. I really enjoyed seeing WrestleMania 31 on there. I think the ending was the best.
best WrestleManias of all time. It's never happened in WWE history before. It was just such a big swerve because we all thought Reigns was going to end up winning. And then all of a sudden you see Rollins come out and he ends up winning. So, I mean, I think WWE should throw us more swerves like that. And I don't think they do enough. So, you can continue with the list. It's been great so far.
Well, I'm definitely glad you guys are enjoying it. I hope everyone else is enjoying it. I'm reading the list as well as everyone else. Like, I have not seen the top four. I have not seen any of these pay-per-views in the order that they're listed. So it's exciting to see what culture.com has the 10 best pay-per-views of the last decade in the WWE listed as. But number four, definitely have seen this one plenty of times on the WWE Network in replay. I unfortunately did not get to see it live, but man, I sure as hell wish I did, because it is a legend. Number four, WrestleMania 26. WrestleMania 26 was the very definition of a one-match show. The whole event was lackluster with the exception of Shawn Michaels' Undertaker rematch. Many considered the bout to be the finest match in WWE history, and no rematch could be more anticipated. The next year, WWE built the show around Michaels and The Undertaker Part 2, only this time, if Michaels lost, he would be forced to retire. The outcome wasn't exactly a secret, because people knew that HBK wanted to step away from the ring to spend more time with his growing children. But the match was every bit as exciting as the first. Worries that the men couldn't live up to the expectations were dashed as Michaels hit a moonsault to the outside and followed up with a sweet chin music. Eventually, though, The Undertaker ended HBK's career with a jumping tombstone. Elsewhere on the card, a very strong John Cena, Batista, and Edge and Chris Jericho title matches filled out the show, and the last ever WrestleMania Money in the Bank ladder match provided some early excitement. WrestleMania 26 turned out to be the show WrestleMania 25 wished it had been. All right, well, we are into the top three now.
Here we go.
Yes, sir. Top three. This is one that Big T went all the way down to New Orleans, Louisiana for WrestleMania 30 XXX. It's possible that in entire WWE history, there has never been a single day as meaningful as April 6th, 2014. On the evening that WrestleMania 30 delivered the highest of highs and the lowest of lows to members of the WWE Universe. A card that was completely reconstructed due to the fan reaction and talent departures opened up with the best WrestleMania kickoff since Bret Hart versus Owen Hart. Daniel Bryan battled Triple H, the man who had screwed him out of the WWE Championship at SummerSlam 2013, for a spot in the show's main event in a technical masterpiece that saw the game target Bryan's already injured arm. The Yes Man outlasted the 13-time world champion, pinning him with the running knee. That meant that Bryan would join Batista and the WWE champion Randy Orton in the final match of the evening, a triple threat bout for the WWE World Championship. Bryan came in at a clear disadvantage, and his foes zeroed in on him, nearly taking him out of the match with a combination of Batista's bombs and RKO through a table. Bryan was strapped to a stretcher, but he came to consciousness, got off of it, and rejoined the match, eventually making Batista tap out to win the title. And as if that was not enough, Brock Lesnar defeated The Undertaker, ending the Phenom's WrestleMania streak. While that match was hurt due to an injury Taker suffered early on, the impact could never be overstated. Back in 2014, WrestleMania 30.
That's probably one of my favorite WrestleManias of all time, honestly.
Oh yeah, that was, I remember being there, and after Undertaker lost, I had to, you know, take a little walk through the concourse, and I seen people just leaving, walking out the doors of the arena, and fans crying. It was just, something I'll never forget. And I did a whole video recapping the Undertaker streak right after WrestleMania 30, and, you know, just reliving those memories, and what happened. It was surely a great WrestleMania and a historic night, and I'm blessed to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I'm gonna be honest with you guys, I didn't have the WWE Network when WrestleMania 30 was going on, and I didn't really want to pay, you know, $70 or whatever it is, so I did not watch WrestleMania 30. Instead, I watched on the network as soon as I watched the full show, as soon as I got the network, which was a couple months later. But I remember exactly where I was. The exact same spot on my couch. And I remember exactly what I was doing. I was on like Bleacher Report. And, I wasn't on Bleacher Report. I was on Instagram, I believe. And I got the notification from Bleacher Report that, Brock Lesnar beats The Undertaker and ends the streak. And I literally, this is no joke, I dropped my phone and just sat there for 5 to 10 minutes and didn't say a word.
I don't blame you. I was speechless. I thought at first sitting there, I really thought the referee screwed up. I thought the referee made an error. I thought Taker was supposed to kick out. And this brings into Paul Heyman trying to feed this whole conspiracy theory, like when he said, you know, was Brock really supposed to win, or did Brock Lesnar hook the Undertaker's leg in such a way where he couldn't kick out when he was supposed to, and that's why his music didn't hit right away. That's why it took a while for the graphic to come up, because Heyman said, what would WWE do, fire the man that just broke the streak? Which, I mean, I believe that Taker was supposed to lose, and that just added into the factor, and they didn't ring the bell right away or put the graphic up because they wanted people to think what was going on. I think Heyman was just trying to troll us there.
All right, guys. Well, we got to continue here. The number two best pay-per-view of the last decade, according to WhatCulture.com, Extreme Rules 2012. WrestleMania 30 was a great show between WrestleMania 28 was a great show between the huge Cena Rock main event, the end of an era Hell in a Cell match between Triple H and The Undertaker, and an exciting WWE title match pitting CM Punk against Chris Jericho. It was truly worthy of the name WrestleMania. Just 1 month later, though, the company put on a show that blew it out of the water. The evening after WrestleMania, Brock Lesnar made a shocking return to the WWE, attacking top dog John Cena. That became the main event of Extreme Rules, and while many fans were shocked that the WWE went with the money match so quickly, interest could not have been higher. The bout was an incredible brawl between a legitimate ass kicker and a dedicated company man willing to take a very real beating. Both men bled the hard way. Although Cena picked up the victory, a highly criticized decision, it was still a one-of-a-kind bout. Chris Jericho and CM Punk clashed in a WrestleMania rematch, a Chicago street fight that was even better than their bout the month before. Finally, Sheamus and Daniel Bryan, who only got 18 seconds at WrestleMania, had a rematch of their own, a 2 out of 3 falls bout that went almost 23 minutes. Needless to say, they were able to show what they could do with some actual time. And now, the moment we've been all waiting for. Man, I know Big T agrees with this one because I've heard him say it several times.
What's number one?
Money in the Bank 2011. What a year. the only pay-per-view of this year to have made an appearance on this list, I do believe. Unless 28 was on there too. Yeah, probably 28. Or no, Extreme Rules. Never mind. I'm going to give up on that. Money in the Bank, 2011, the number one best pay-per-view out of the last decade. Money in the Bank. Pay-per-views are always good, but in the case of the 2011 edition, it wasn't the two ladder matches that made it the best pay-per-view of the last decade or of all time. What made the show so great was one of the company's most compelling storylines ever culminated in one of the best matches in WWE history. In June of 2011, CM Punk cut his famous pipe bomb promo where he ran down the WWE talent and management while mentioning that his contract was coming to an end. That ended up leading to a title match with WWE champion John Cena with a lot of pressure on both sides. Punk had to legitimize his boasts with a win while Cena needed the victory to keep the WWE title in the company. The match was a classic, held in front of a Chicago crowd that would have died for their hero. CM Punk and John Cena, who always had incredible chemistry in the ring, fought back and forth an incredible spectacle of pro wrestling. And in the end, Punk clocked Cena with the go-to-sleep, picking up a mostly clean win, and despite Vince McMahon's protests, absconding with the WWE Championship. Throw in two excellent Money in the Bank matches, one by Daniel Bryan and Alberto Del Rio, and a very great Christian Randy Orton contest, and the result is a recipe for success that may never be equaled. Money in the Bank, 2011, WhatCulture.com's best pay-per-view of the last decade.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have to agree with that listing, especially number one. I'm not sure if Sean, I'm not sure if you were on when Big T asked me, I think you were actually, when Big T asked me if, what was my favorite match of all time. That, and obviously I said I have to pick a recent one. And I said CM Punk versus John Cena at Money in the Bank 2011. So, I mean, that just goes to show you how good that show was.
You got good taste, buddy.
It definitely was a show. I don't even know if I could ever get even that hyped up for WrestleMania. I mean, the way, well, of course I can't go in there live, but when I say that, I mean, I'm sorry, when I say, if I could get that hyped up for WrestleMania, I mean watching on TV. If I would have been at Money in the Bank 2011 live, that probably would have been the single greatest experience of my life. It's just, WWE did the perfect storyline for this. That will never be recaptured. That is simply lightning in a bottle that you will never be able to recapture again as long as we live on this earth and as long as the WWE exists. And as long as this earth exists, that was just sheer gold. And I mean, you know, I know some people disagree with it and there's people that agree with it. And I really think What Culture got that one right. They couldn't have picked a better show in my opinion.
Well, I'm definitely glad you guys enjoyed it. But now here's a predicament we're in right now for this day in wrestling history. We started the show on August 3rd, but now technically it's August 4th. So let me tell you this. I'm going to recap August 3rd real quick and what I thought was notable for this day in history for August 3rd. But then my main story is going to be August 4th since I got an even better piece of history to pay tribute to for this day of August 4th, which it technically is. So this day, well, yesterday in wrestling history, if you will, was SummerSlam, Heart and Soul, 19 years ago, in 1996. Wow. The main event, well, actually, looking back on it, all these matches are freaking main events, so I'm just going to read them real quick. Mankind defeated...
It was actually 97, sorry, buddy, 1997. If they have 96 in there, that was a typo on their part. Because this is the 97 SummerSlam, so just wanted to point that out real quick.
Are you sure about that?
I'm 100% absolutely positive. It was the 1997 SummerSlam, because the 1996 one
wasn't... Oh,
yeah,
that would be 20 years.
Yeah, so 1996
would be 20 years.
Yeah, so they got a typo in there.
Okay, you're definitely right. Thank you very much. But still, 19 years ago, can't believe it. 1997 Heart and Soul SummerSlam. We had Mankind defeat Hunter Hearst Helmsley in a steel cage match. Goldust defeated Brian Pillman, and the Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal, defeated the Godwins, the British Bulldog, and, well, he defeated Ken Shamrock via DQ to retain the WWF European Championship. Los Boricuas, they defeated the Disciples of the Apocalypse. Stone Cold Steve Austin defeated Owen Hart to win the WWF Intercontinental Championship in what is the most controversial Intercontinental Championship match I believe there ever was and ever will be, and if not one of the most controversial SummerSlam matches of all time. Absolutely. I think it was all one big work. Still to this day, I do not believe Stone Cold was legitimately injured in that match. I believe Stone Cold was told to go out and fake an injury, and we're going to rebrand you over the next couple months, because I'm sorry, if you break your neck on SummerSlam, there's no chance in hell, no matter who you are, you're going to be live on Monday Night Raw the next night up on the ring apron. You're just not. I'm sorry. I just never believed it. I don't know why they're continuing that lie, if it is a lie, which I firmly believe it was. And in the main event, Bret Hart defeated The Undertaker to win the WWF Championship. Shawn Michaels was the special guest referee in that match. So, 19 years ago, SummerSlam, 97, when Steve Austin and Owen Hart and Bret Hart and The Undertaker and Mick Foley and Triple H, my God, I think I would give my left arm to go back to those days, man. It's just to go back in those days and like slap myself on the head and be like, you better be enjoying this because it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Sean, I mean, absolutely incredible pay-per-view. I mean, with the cage match with Triple H and Mankind, awesome. Austin and, you know, Owen Hart, I mean, I definitely, you know, see your point on that, and it can very well be possible. And, you know, if you really legit broke your neck, how are you going to be able to move to roll someone up, too?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll never know the truth to it 100%, but, you know, that is what it is. And honestly, with Bret Hart and The Undertaker, I truly believe one of the best title matches ever, with one of the best endings ever, with Shawn Michaels turning heel, opening the door for his rivalry with The Undertaker, and then opening the door for Montreal a few months down the line. Absolutely incredible. Like, I think that SummerSlam, dare I say, was probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, SummerSlam of all time. It was absolutely incredible. And if you have not seen it on the WWE Network, I highly suggest you go back and check that out.
I'm going to watch it tonight.
How do you feel, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't able to watch it live, but I wish I'll probably go back and watch it sometime. Definitely, it sounds like a great show.
Oh, definitely sure. Recommend that, buddy. But I always like to bring up this part of history whenever I have the opportunity. This was August 4th, 1998, when WCW presented Collision in Korea on pay-per-view. Now, the event had originally been taped over 2 days in April, but it was co-promoted by New Japan Pro Wrestling. It was the first North American wrestling pay-per-view to take place in the communist country of North Korea. I mean, unthinkable. unfreaking thinkable, mind blowing, with a reported combined attendance of 340,000 people. It was the largest attended pro wrestling event ever. Results below are matches that were broadcasted on the pay-per-view. Wild Pegasus, aka Chris Benoit, defeated Too Cold Scorpio. Yuji Nagata defeated Tokimitsu Ishiwaza via submission. Masahiro Chono and Hiro Sayato defeated El Samurai and Toto Yasuda. Cool Nakana and Akira Hakuto defeated Manami Toyota and Mariko Yoshida. Shinya Hashimoto fought Scott Norton to a 20-minute time limit draw for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Road Warrior Hawk defeated Tado Yasuda, and the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, defeated Hiroshi Hase and Kensuke Sasaki. And in the main event, doesn't get much better than this. Antonio Inoki defeated Ric Flair live from North frickin' Korea in front of 340 fucking thousand people. Pardon my Korean, but as a wrestling fan, this is just mind craziness. Like, every time I think about this pay-per-view and how it's really never been seen, actually, it's very hard to see this. This is one of the few pay-per-views from WCW. WWE has never put on the network. Very hard to come across online. I have personally never seen it. I've seen very few even images of this. This is just a true anomaly of a wrestling fan's life that this ever happened, and that it will certainly never happen again considering North Korean relations now. And the fact that it is rumored to be, now it is alleged to be, the largest crowd in history. Whether the numbers are fudged or not, because, you know, North Koreans tend to like to, how do I like to say this, put themselves over undeservingly in many facets of their existence. I doubt that that number is accurate, but I think it's safe to say they certainly had over 100,000 people there. But I'll never know. And you know what? We'll have to ask Ric Flair one day if he ever puts down the glass of wine or something. I don't know. But I know Big T and me have talked about this before. I don't even know if Evan even knew that this ever happened. But WCW, 18 years ago, August 4th, Collision in Korea. I hope everyone gets an opportunity to research it. And maybe one day, just maybe WWE, if you're listening, put it on the freaking WWE Network already, along with all the other missing shows.
Yeah, like, I totally remember. I seen Evan dropped out, so I think maybe his phone died. He's probably going to try to get back with us here, because I know that's what happened on one of the streams. His phone died, and then he tried to get back on.
Good thing you said that, because my phone was at 1%.
Really? Oh, here's Evan back now. Evan.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I had a little trouble there.
Oh, that's okay. Did you get a chance to hear anything about the Collision in Korea that Sean was talking about? One of those rare events that are not seen?
No. If you guys could give me like a quick summary real quick, I mean, if you guys want to.
It basically was held over a span of 2 days. They said there was about 340,000 people that witnessed it, you know, over the 2 days, so like 100-some thousand one day, 100-some thousand the next. And then, you know, it had a pretty damn good card, with the main event being Antonio Inoki defeating Ric Flair for the World Heavyweight Championship. And actually, the only footage that I have ever seen of that show was during Antonio Inoki's Hall of Fame video package, when it showed him defeating Ric Flair for that championship. That's wow. The only footage that I've ever seen. The only footage that I've seen was Antonio Inoki beating Ric Flair for that title.
And it's so crazy because this was a WCW broadcasted pay-per-view. Where are the bootlegs or anything? Even a picture, a screenshot, nothing exists.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing is, I know you and me covered this extensively when we used to do wrestling, or ringside talk on my YouTube channel before we started the podcast. I know we covered this extensively. Collision in Korea, there was a few other, you know, pay-per-views that didn't get added to the network. This was one of them. I know WWF Experience that happened in, what, September of 96 in an outside stadium in Canada was only available on internet pay-per-view. I remember we talked about that, and Shawn Michaels and Goldust main evented that in a ladder match for the WWE title. But going back to this, I know where they're getting those attendance numbers, Sean. This had to be held. I don't know if it says in the article, but this had to be held in the May Day Stadium in Seoul, South Korea. It had to be held there because that stadium can hold 150,000 plus.
No. This was in North Korea.
Or North Korea. I'm sorry, not South Korea. I apologize. Sorry, that one's on me. I got that one wrong. But the May Day Stadium in North Korea, it had to be there. It can hold 150,000 plus. So they're counting over 2 days, 340,000 people were there. Because it was 2 days. Day one, they probably had 150. Then day two, they had 150, which would be 300,000 total. I think they're a little over on the 340. I would go with 300. But they're counting over 2 days. But I would even think the people that went there over 2 days are probably the same people that went to day one. And
just an absolute, you know, crazy. Like, if you're following current events and politics and you understand the situation in North Korea at the moment, this is, it's like, laughable that this would ever happen.
Yeah. I mean, Evan, you know, since you heard that little brush up, you know, with this, how do you feel about this whole collision in Korea with the little that you've heard from it?
It sounds like a great show. I mean, it's a shame that I couldn't go back and watch this one. I haven't really heard anything about the guy that wrestled Flair, but I'm sure if it had Ric Flair, I'm sure it was definitely quality.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Antonio Inoki, him being a WWE Hall of Famer, it only goes to show you that he was also a supreme talent. I mean, two Hall of Famers, you know, in the same ring, doing what they do, and just in a rare event like that. I wish, you know, see, that's one thing that boggles my mind about the WWE Network. When they did the commercials, when they launched the network, they promised us every single WWE, WCW, and ECW pay-per-view. That was a promise. Now, I get that it's not a large percent that's not on the network. I believe there's what, Sean, when we read that list a long time ago, there's like 10 or 12 pay-per-views that are not on the network. For what reason, I don't know. I have no idea. But the point is the principle of it, why would WWE promise and basically say, we guarantee you get every pay-per-view, when every pay-per-view is not there?
I don't think there's any better way to end it with that cliffhanger, man.
Definitely. And, you know, obviously, we went a little over tonight. I mean, we did. But, you know, I can say even though things went a little over, we damn sure did rock solid here for everybody that, that's been listening and, you know, tuning in. Hope everybody's been enjoying it. Evan, Sean, do you guys got any closing statements here on the show?
Real quick, I just want to say I've been a wrestling podcast listener for close to 5 years now. I may be a bit biased, but I've never heard, say, if I were just listening to a podcast not, you know, obviously being a part of it, I've never heard a better and more well-informed group of podcasters get together with such a range deliver a better show. So I'm really proud of tonight's show. I hope that everyone who listens to it appreciates it and give us your feedback. And I definitely think this is one that if we were going up for an Emmy nomination or something, I would definitely recommend that they listen to this one, and we would be getting bunches of awards, brother. So good work, and thanks again for having me.
Hey, man, you know, you're welcome anytime here. And Evan, you got anything to say, buddy?
Yeah, man. It was another great show down in the books. You know, I'm not sure how my schedule's looking for next week, so I can't give you any information about next week, sadly, right now. So this may be my last show for a while, maybe on next week. So I don't really know, but, either way, it was a great show. It's awesome talking with you guys. You guys are two of the most informed fans that I know. Your opinions are always solid, and they make sense. Like when you guys like book stuff, it all makes sense. And that just goes to show both of you guys your wrestling knowledge. And I'm happy to be talking wrestling with guys with that kind of knowledge. I just want to thank you, Big T, for having me on. I want to thank Sean for having me on. And I just wanted to say that if you guys haven't checked it out on YouTube, there is my show, another sports podcast, which I host with Redicus. One other guy, his name is Morgan. It is on YouTube. Just type in the search bar, another sports podcast. We do live shows every Friday. Big T was on last week. He may be on this week for the WWE section. We're not too sure. I'm sure we'll talk about that after this shortly. It's a great time over there. Beyond the Ring it's a great podcast, great channel on YouTube, the best wrestling channel on YouTube probably for all your content. Everything you could possibly want is on Beyond the Ring. So and this is you guys. So I just wanted to thank you guys again for having me on, and till next time.
Hey Evan, that's definitely great having you, and I hope you could come back on and, be a part of more shows to come, like even for Raw and SmackDown reviews on Monday and Tuesday night, because that's when I'll be back on the air, everybody, on YouTube. If those of you listening in podcast world over there on iTunes and Podomatic, by the way, the links are down below to download the podcast, and make sure you leave it a 5-star rating. If you want to catch me on YouTube, make sure you type in Beyond the Ring with Big T on the YouTube search box. Subscribe to the channel. I'll be doing a Monday Night Raw review on Monday night and a SmackDown review on SmackDown Live review on Tuesday night. And then I don't know about the podcast. Sean, do you have any news on your schedule for next week's podcast before we check out of here?
Well, I do have my schedule, but we'll sort of figure this one out as we go. Maybe we could find a day where we're all free. So at this moment, I think it's just best to say we'll be back next week, but stay tuned for an actual, time.
Yep. Okay. Like I said, if you guys don't mind, I just want to say one more time, like I said, another sports podcast, episode 4, coming this Friday. You guys may be seeing, everybody in podcast world, if you like Big T stuff on YouTube, you may be seeing him on the podcast this week. Who knows? So it's always a great time over there. It's a really good listen. And Sean, I just want to say you're welcome too. Honestly, I mean we're always open to having guests on, especially for the WWE section, because Morgan does not watch the WWE, so he's not that much of a informed fan. So when me and Rhett do the WWE section, it's always better with a third or fourth guy. So I mean, if any of you guys want to come on, just contact me, really. And like I said, there's a pretty good chance Big T could be on this week. Sean, I know you work. I don't know how busy your schedule is upcoming, but yeah, like I said, anytime you guys are welcome.
I definitely appreciate that, man. And I've done a podcast with Redicus before. Always a good time there. So if I have the opportunity, I will definitely take you up on that, and I really appreciate it. And yeah, like Evan said, I hope everyone checks out, you know, our sister station, Another Sports Podcast.
Definitely, and we'll be having some good times over there. And Sean, what is it time for right now, my brother?
It is time for R-Truth to take, EC3 to take us home.
Yes, sir. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I really, really appreciate those of you that have listened to this in podcast land on iTunes or Podomatic, or that have watched the video version of this podcast on YouTube tonight, or the replays on YouTube. I greatly appreciate it. I couldn't be more proud to host a show and have my name on the show with, and, you know, have a great team, you know, with Sean backing me up and, you know, doing everything that he did tonight, and Evan coming on and giving, you know, some great points. And I couldn't be happier to have great people backing me up here. And this is a show that I'm definitely proud of. I couldn't be more proud of it. And, you know, this is truly one that is, you know, going to stick with me for, you know, for a while. I am so proud of this. I can't even explain to you guys how proud I am of this. And, before we play EC3, Evan, mute your mic up too as well. So that way EC3's, taking us home here. It'll stay on the, screen. But, everybody, thank you very much for tuning in tonight and listening. I'll be back Monday night with the Raw review, Tuesday night with the SmackDown review, live on YouTube, and Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, somewhere around there, sometime next week. Guaranteed, we'll be back with episode 12 of Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. So thank you again for tuning in. This has been a groundbreaking show. Please listen. Please download, subscribe on iTunes, leave those 5-star ratings, all that good stuff. Follow on Podomatic, subscribe to the YouTube channel, leave likes, comments, all that good stuff. I really appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, once again. I love you all, and I'm truly blessed to do this. Thank you all very much, and we're going to send the show out the only way we know how, with my buddy, Mr. EC3, the former 2-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion, is going to head us on home into the sunset here, and you know, we'll see you next week on the podcast, and I'll see you on Monday night for the Raw review, and then Tuesday, and then for the SmackDown review, and then next week for the podcast. So thank you for watching tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I really appreciate it, and we will see you next week on the podcast. Good night, everybody, and here is EC3 to send us on home. See you next week, everybody.
Hello, this is EC3 of TNA Wrestling, and you are so very fortunate because you are watching Beyond the Ring with Big T.